What the fuck is going on?
Alan, I said, you're the physicist. Alan stared at the damaged CDF cruiser, now listing and struck again by another volley.
No ideas, John. This is all new to me.
This sucks, Fiona said.
Keep it together, I said. We're in trouble, and losing it is not going to help.
If you've got a better plan, I'm all ears, Fiona said again.
Is it okay to access my brain pal if I'm not trying to reach the Modesto? I asked.
Sure, Fiona said. As long as no transmissions leave the shuttle, we're fine.
I accessed Asshole and pulled up a geographic map of Coral.
Well, I said, I think we can pretty much say the attack on the Coral mining facility is canceled for today. Not enough of us made it off the Modesto for a realistic assault, and I don't think all of us are going to make it to the planet's surface in one piece. Not every pilot's going to be as quick on her feet as you are, Fiona.
Fiona nodded, and I could tell she relaxed a little. Praise is always a good thing, especially in a crisis.
Okay, here's the new plan, I said, and transmitted the map to Fiona and Alan. Array forces are concentrated on the coral reefs and in the colonial cities, here on this coast. So we go here.
I pointed to the big, fat middle of Coral's largest continent.
Hide in this mountain range and wait for the second wave.
If they come, Alan said. A skip drone is bound to get back to Phoenix. They'll know that the Array know they're coming. If they know that, they might not come at all.
Oh, they'll come, I said. They might not come when we want them to, is all. We have to be ready to wait for them. The good news here is Coral is human-friendly. We can eat off the land for as long as we need to.
I'm not in the mood to colonize, Alan said.
It's not permanent, I said. And it's better than the alternative.
Good point, Alan said. I turned to Fiona.
What do you need to do to get us to where we're going in one piece?
A prayer, she said. We're in good shape now because we look like floating junk, but anything that hits the atmosphere that's larger than a human body is going to be tracked by Array forces. As soon as we start maneuvering, they're going to notice us.
How long can we stay up here? I asked.
Not that long, Fiona said. No food, no water, and even with our new improved bodies, there's a couple of dozen of us in here, and we're going to run out of fresh air pretty fast.
How long after we hit the atmosphere are you going to have to start driving? I asked.
Soon, she said. If we start tumbling, I'll never get control of it again. We'll just fall down until we die.
Do what you can, I said. She nodded. All right, Alan, I said. Time to alert the troops about the change in plan.
Here we go,
Fiona said, and hit the thrusters. The force of the acceleration pinned me back into the co-pilot seat. No longer falling to the surface of Coral, we were aiming ourselves directly at it.
Chop coming,
Fiona said, as we plunged into the atmosphere. The shuttle rattled like a maraca. The instrumentation board let out a ping.
Active scanning, I said. We're being tracked.
Got it,
Fiona said, banking.
We have some high clouds coming up in a few seconds, she said. They might help to confuse them.
Do they usually? I asked.
No,
she said, and flew into them anyway. We came out several clicks east and were pinged again.
Still tracking, I said. Aircraft, 350 clicks out and closing.
Going to get as close to the ground as I can before they get on top of us, she said. We can't outrace them or outshoot them. The best we can hope is to get near the ground and hope some of their missiles hit the treetops and not us.
Well, that's not very encouraging, I said.
I'm not in the encouragement business today, Fiona said.
Hold on.
We dove sickeningly.
The Array aircraft were on us presently.
Missiles, I said.
Fiona lurched left and tumbled us toward the ground. One missile overflew and trailed away. The other slammed into a hilltop as we crested.
Nice,
I said, and then nearly bit off my tongue as a third missile detonated directly behind us, knocking the shuttle out of control. A fourth missile concussed and shrapnel tore into the side of the shuttle. In the roaring of the air, I could hear some of my men screaming.
Going down,
Fiona said, and struggled to right the shuttle. She was headed toward a small lake at an incredibly high speed.
We're going to hit the water and crash, she said. Sorry.
You did good,
I said. and then the nose of the shuttle hit the surface of the lake. Wrenching, tearing sounds as the nose of the shuttle ripped downward, shearing off the pilot's compartment from the rest of the shuttle. A brief register of my squad and Allen's as their compartment flies, spinning away. A still shot with mouths open, screams silent in all the other noise, the roar as it flies over the shuttle nose, which is already fraying apart as it whirls over the water. The tight, impossible spins as the nose sheds metal and instrumentation. The sharp pain of something striking my jaw and taking it away with it. Gurgling as I try to scream, gray smart blood flung from the wound by centrifugal force. An unintentional glance at Fiona, whose head and right arm are somewhere behind us. A tang of metal as my seat breaks off from the rest of the pilot's compartment and I am skipping on my back towards an outcropping of rock, my chair lazily spinning me in counterclockwise direction as my chair back bounces, bounces, bounces towards the stone. A quick and dizzying change in momentum as my right leg strikes the outcropping, followed by a yellow-white burst of 200-proof pain as the femur snaps like a pretzel stick. My foot swings directly up where my jaw used to be, and I become perhaps the first person in the history of man to kick himself in his own uvula. I arc over dry land and come to ground somewhere where branches are still falling because the passenger compartment of the shuttle has just crashed through. One of the branches comes down heavily across my chest and breaks at least three of my ribs. After kicking myself in my own uvula, this is strangely anticlimactic. I look up, I have no choice, and see Allen above me, hanging upside down, the splintered end of a tree branch supporting his torso by wedging itself into the space where his liver should be. Smart blood is dripping off his forehead onto my neck. I see his eyes twitch, registering me. Then I get a message on my brain pal.
"You look terrible," he sends.
I can't respond. I can only stare.
"I hope I can see the constellations where I'm going," he sends.
He sends it again. He sends it again. He doesn't send it after that. Chittering. Rough pads gripping my arm. Asshole recognizes the chittering and beams me a translation.
"This one yet lives."
"Leave it. It will die soon. And the green ones aren't good eating. They're not ripe yet."
Snorting, which asshole translates as laughter.
"Holy fuck, would you look at this," someone says. "This son of a bitch is alive."
Another voice, familiar.
"Let me see."
Silence. The familiar voice again.
"Get this log off him. We're taking him back."
"Jesus Christ, boss," the first voice says. "Look at him. You ought to just put a fucking bullet in his brain. It'd be the merciful thing to do."
"We were told to bring back survivors," the familiar voice said. "Guess what? He survived. He's the only one that survived."
"If you think this qualifies as surviving..."
"Are you done?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Good. Now move the goddamn branch. The RA are going to be on our ass real soon."
Opening my eyes is like trying to lift metal doors. What allows me to do it is the blasting pain I feel as the branch is moved off my torso. My eyes fly open and I aspirate in the jawless equivalent of a scream.
"Christ,"
the first voice says, and I see it's a man, blonde, flinging away the massive branch.
"He's awake!"
A warm hand on the side of what's left of my face.
"Hey," the familiar voice says. "Hey, you're all right now. It's okay. You're safe now. We're taking you back. It's okay. You're okay."
Her face comes into view.
I know the face. I was married to it. Kathy has come for me. I weep. I know I'm dead. I don't mind.
I begin to slide away.
You ever see this guy before?
I hear the blonde guy ask.
Don't be stupid, I hear Kathy say. Of course not.
I'm gone. Into another universe. Part 3. Chapter 13.
Ah, you're awake, someone said to me as I opened my eyes. Listen, don't try to speak. You're immersed in solution. You've got a breathing tube in your neck, and you don't have a jaw.
I glanced around. I was floating in a bath of liquid, thick, warm, and translucent. Beyond the tub, I could see objects, but couldn't focus on any of them. As promised, a breathing tube snaked from a panel at the side of the bath towards my neck. I tried to follow it all the way to my body, but my field of vision was blocked by an apparatus surrounding the lower half of my head. I tried to touch it, but I couldn't move my arms. That worried me.
Don't worry about that, the voice said. We've turned off your ability to move. Once you're out of the tub, we'll switch you back on again. Another couple of days. You still have access to your brain pal, by the way. If you want to communicate, use that. That's how we're talking to you right now.
Where the fuck am I? I sent. And what happened to me?
You're at the Brenneman Medical Facility above Phoenix, the voice said. Best care anywhere. You're in intensive care. I'm Dr. Fiorina, and I've been taking care of you since you got here. As for what happened to you, well, let's see. First off, you're in good shape now, so don't worry. Having said that, you lost your jaw, your tongue, most of your right cheek and ear. Your right leg was snapped off halfway down your femur. Your left one suffered multiple fractures, and your left foot was missing three toes and the heel. We think those were gnawed off. The good news there was that your spinal cord was severed below the rib cage, so you probably didn't feel much of that. Speaking of ribs, six were broken, one of which punctured your gallbladder, and you suffered general internal bleeding. Not to mention sepsis and a host of other general and specific infections brought on by having open wounds for days.
I thought I was dead, I said. Dying, anyway.
Since you're no longer in real danger of dying, I think I can tell that, by all rights, you really should be dead, Dr. Fiorina said. If you were an unmodified human, you would be dead. Thank your smart blood for keeping you alive. It clotted it up before you could bleed out and kept your infections in check. It was a close thing, though. If you hadn't been found when you had, you probably would have been dead shortly after that. As it was, when they got you back to the Sparrowhawk, they shoved you into a stasis tube to get you here. They couldn't do much for you on the ship. You needed specialized care.
I saw my wife, I sent. She was the one that rescued me.
Oh, is your wife a soldier?
She's been dead for years.
Oh, said Dr. Fiorina. Then, well, you were pretty far gone. Hallucinations aren't that unusual at that point, the bright tunnel and dead relatives and all of that. Well, listen, Corporal, your body still needs a lot of work, and it's easier for it to get done while you're asleep. There's nothing for you to do in there but float. I'm going to put you into sleep mode again for a while. The next time you wake up, you'll be out of the tub, and enough of your jaw will have grown back for you to have a real conversation. All right?
What happened to my squad? I sent.
We were in a crash. Sleep now, Dr. Fiorina said. We can talk more when you're out of the tub. I started to craft a truly irritated response, but was hit by a wave of fatigue. I was out before I could think about how quickly I was going out.
"Hey, look who's back!" this new voice said. "The man too dumb to die!"
This time I wasn't floating in a vat of goo. I glanced over and made out where the voice was coming from.
"Harry,"
I said, as well as I could through an immobile jaw.
"The same,"
he said, bowing slightly.
"Sorry I can't get up," I mumbled. "I'm a little banged up."
"A little banged up, he says," Harry said, rolling his eyes. "Christ on a pony. There was more of you missing than was there, John, I know. I saw them haul your carcass back up off of Coral. When they said you were still alive, my jaw dropped to the floor.
Funny, I said. I'm sorry, Harry said.
No pun intended, but you were almost unrecognizable, John. A mess of parts. Don't take this the wrong way, but I prayed you would die. I couldn't imagine they could piece you back together like this.
Glad to disappoint you, I said.
I'm glad to be disappointed, he said. And then someone else entered the room.
Jesse, I said.
Jesse came around the bed and gave me a peck on the cheek.
Welcome back to the land of the living, John, she said, and then stepped back. Look at us, together again, the three musketeers.
2½ musketeers anyway, I said.
Don't be morbid, Jesse said. Dr. Fiorina says you're going to make a full recovery. Your jaw should be completely grown by tomorrow, and the leg will be another couple of days after that. You'll be skipping around in no time.
I reached down and felt my right leg. It was all there, or at least felt all there. I pulled back the bed covers to get a better look, and there it was. My leg. Sort of. Right below the knee there was a verdant welt. Above the welt, my leg looked like my leg. Below it, it looked like a prosthesis. I knew what was going on. One of my squad had her leg blown off in battle and had it recreated in the same way. They attached a nutrient-rich fake limb at the point of amputation and then injected a stream of nanobots into the merge area. Using your own DNA as a guide, the nanobots then convert the nutrients and raw materials of the fake limb into flesh and bone, connecting to already existing muscles, nerves, blood vessels, and so on. The ring of nanobots slowly moved down the fake limb until it had been converted into bone and muscle tissue. Once they were done, they migrated through the bloodstream to the intestines, and you shat them out. Not very delicate, but a good solution. There was no surgery, no wait to create cloned parts, no clumsy artificial parts attached to your body. And it took only a couple of weeks, depending on the size of your amputation, to get the limb back. It was how they got back my jaw and, presumably, the heels and toes of my left foot, which were now all present and accounted for.
"How long have I been here?"
I asked.
"You've been in this room for about a day," Jesse said. "You were in the tub for about a week before that."
"It took us 4 days to get here, during which time you were in stasis. Did you know about that?" Harry asked. I nodded. "And it was a couple of days before they found you on Coral, so you've been out of it more or less for 2 weeks." I looked at both of them.
"I'm glad to see both of you," I said. "Well, don't get me wrong, but why are you here? Why aren't you on the Hampton Roads?"
"The Hampton Roads was destroyed, John," Jesse said. "They hit us right as we were coming in from our skip. Our shuttle barely got out of the bay and damaged its engines on the way out. We were the only ones. We drifted for almost a day and a half before the Sparrowhawk found us. Came real close to asphyxiation."
I recalled watching as a Array ship slugged a cruiser on its way in. I wondered if it had been the Hampton Roads.
"What happened to the Modesto?" I asked. "Do you know?"
Jesse and Harry looked at each other.
"The Modesto went down too," Harry said, finally. "John, they all went down. It was a massacre." "Well, they can't all have gone down," I said. "You said you were picked up by the Sparrowhawk, and they came to get me too."
"The Sparrowhawk came later, after the first wave," Harry said. "It skipped in far away from the planet. Whatever the Array used to detect our ships missed it, although they caught on after the Sparrowhawk parked itself above where you went down. That was a close thing."
"How many survivors?" I asked.
"You were the only one off the Modesto," Jesse said.
"Other shuttles got away," I said.
"They were shot down," Jesse said. "The Array shot down everything bigger than a breadbox. The only reason our shuttle survived was that our engines were already dead. They probably didn't want to waste the missile."
"How many survivors total?" I said.
It can't just be me and your shuttle.
Jesse and Harry stood mute.
No fucking way,
I said.
It was an ambush, John,
Harry said.
Every ship that skipped in was hit almost as soon as it arrived in Coral Space. We don't know how they did it, but they did it, and they followed through by mopping up every shuttle they could find. That's why the Sparrowhawk risked us all to find you, because, besides us, you're the only survivor. Your shuttle is the only one that made it to the planet. They found you by following the shuttle beacon. Your pilot flipped it on before you crashed.
I remembered Fiona. And Alan.
How many were lost?
I asked. 62 battalion-strength cruisers with full crews, Jesse said. 95,000 people, more or less.
I feel sick,
I said.
This was what you'd call a good old-fashioned clusterfuck, Harry said. There's no doubt about that at all. So that's why we're still here. There's nowhere else for us to go.
Well, that and they keep interrogating us, Jesse said. As if we knew anything. We were already in our shuttle when we were hit.
They've been dying for you to recover enough to talk to,
Harry said, to me.
You'll be getting a visit from the CDF investigators very soon, I suspect.
What are they like?
I asked.
Humorless, Harry said.
You'll forgive us if we're not in the mood for jokes, Corporal Perry, Lieutenant Colonel Newman said. When you lose 60 ships and 100,000 men, it pretty much leaves you in a serious state of mind. All I had said was broken up when Newman asked how I was doing. I thought a slightly wry recognition of my physical condition was not entirely out of place. I guess I was wrong. I'm sorry, I said. Although I wasn't really joking, as you may know, I left a rather significant portion of my body on Coral.
How did you get to be on Coral anyway? Asked Major Javna, who was my other interviewer.
Well, I seem to remember taking the shuttle, I said, although the last part I did on my own. Javna glanced over to Newman as if to say, again with the jokes.
Corporal, in your report on the incident, you mention you gave your shuttle pilot permission to blow the Modesto shuttle bay doors.
That's right, I said. I had filed the report the night before, shortly after my visit from Harry and Jesse.
On whose authority did you give that command?
On my own, I said. The Modesto was getting hammered with missiles. I figured that a little individual initiative at that point in time would not be such a bad thing.
Are you aware how many shuttles were launched across the entire fleet at Coral?
No, I said, although it seems to have been very few.
Less than 100, including the 7 from the Modesto, Newman said. And do you know how many made it to the Coral surface? Javna said.
My understanding is that only mine made it that far, I said.
That's right, Javna said.
So? I said.
So, Newman said, that seems to have been pretty lucky for you that you ordered the doors blown just in time to get your shuttle out just in time to make it to the surface alive.
I stared blankly at Newman.
Do you suspect me of something, sir? I said. You have to admit it's an interesting string of coincidences, Javna said.
The hell I do, I said. I gave the order after the Modesto was hit. My pilot had the training and the presence of mind to get us to Coral and close enough to the ground that I was able to survive. And if you recall, I only barely did so. Most of my body was scraped over an area the size of Rhode Island. The only lucky thing was that I was found before I died. Everything else was skill or intelligence, either mine or my pilot's. Excuse me if we were trained well, sir.
Javna and Newman glanced at each other. We're only following every line of inquiry, Newman said mildly.
Christ, I said. Think about it. If I really planned to betray the CDF and survive it, chances are I'd try to do it in a manner that didn't involve removing my own fucking jaw. I figured that in my condition, I just might be able to snarl at a superior officer and get away with it. I was right.
Let's move on,
Newman said.
By all means, let's, I said.
You mentioned you saw a Array battlecruiser firing on a CDF cruiser as it skipped into Coral space.
That's correct, I said.
Interesting you managed to see that, Javna said.
I sighed.
Are you going to do this all through the interview? I said. Things will move along a lot quicker if you're not always trying to get me to admit I'm a spy. Corporal, the missile attack?
Newman said.
Do you remember whether the missiles were launched before or after the CDF ship skipped into Coral space?
My guess is that they were launched just before, I said.
At least it seemed that way to me. They knew when and where that ship was going to pop out. How do you think that's possible?
Javna asked.
I don't know, I said. I didn't even know how skip drives worked until a day before the attack. Knowing what I know, it doesn't seem like there should be any way to know a ship is coming.
What do you mean, knowing what you know?
Newman said.
Alan, another squad leader.
I didn't want to say he was a friend, because I suspected they'd think that was suspicious.
Said that skip drives work by transferring a ship into another universe just like the one it left, and that both its appearance and disappearance are phenomenally unlikely. If that's the case, it doesn't seem like you should be able to know when and where a ship will appear, it just does.
What do you think happened here, then?
Asked Javna.
What do you mean?
I asked.
Well, as you say, there shouldn't be any way to know that a ship is skipping, Javna said. The only way we can figure this ambush occurred is if someone tipped off the Array.
Oh, back to this, I said.
Look, even if we supposed the existence of a traitor, how did he do it?
Even if he somehow managed to get word to the Array that a fleet was coming, there's no possible way he could have known where every ship was going to appear in Coral space.
The Array were waiting for us, remember? They hit us while we were skipping into Coral space. So again, Javna said. What do you think happened here?
I shrugged.
Maybe skipping isn't as unlikely as we thought it was, I said.
Don't get too worked up over the interrogations,
Harry said, handing me a cup of fruit juice he had gotten for me at the medical center's commissary.
They gave us the same, it's suspicious you survived bit.
How did you react? I asked.
Hell, Harry said. I agreed with them. It's damn suspicious. Funny thing is, I don't think they like that response any better. But ultimately, you can't blame them. The colonies have just gotten the rug pulled out from under us. If we don't figure out what happened at Coral, we're in trouble.
Well, and there's an interesting point, I said. What do you think happened?
I don't know, Harry said. Maybe skipping isn't as unlikely as we thought.
He sipped his own juice.
Funny. That's what I said.
Yeah, but I mean it,
Harry said.
I don't have the theoretical physics background of Alan, God rest his soul, but the entire theoretical model on which we understand skipping has to be wrong somehow. Obviously, the Array have some way to predict with a high degree of accuracy where our ships are going to skip.
How do they do that?
I don't think you're supposed to be able to, I said.
That's exactly right. But they do anyway.
So, quite obviously, our model of how skipping works is wrong. Theory gets thrown out the window when observation proves it isn't so. The question now is, what is really going on?
Any thoughts on it? I said.
A couple. Although it's not really my field, Harry said. I don't really have the math for it.
I laughed.
You know, Alan said something very much like that to me not too long ago.
Harry smiled and raised his cup.
To Alan, he said.
To Alan, I said. And all our absent friends.
Amen,
Harry said. And we drank.
Harry, you said you were there when they brought me on board the Sparrowhawk, I said.
I was,
he said.
You were a mess.
No offense.
None taken, I said.
Do you remember anything about the squad that brought me in?
A little, Harry said. But not too much. They kept us isolated away from the rest of the ship for most of the trip.
I saw you in the sick bay when they brought you in. They were examining us. Was there a woman in my rescue party?
Yes, Harry said.
Tall, brown hair. That's all I remember right off the top of my head. To be honest, I was paying more attention to you than who was bringing you in. I knew you. I didn't know them. Why?
Harry, one of the people who rescued me was my wife. I'd swear on it.
I thought your wife is dead, Harry said.
My wife is dead, I said. But this was her. It wasn't Kathy as she was back when we were married. She was a CDF soldier, green skin and all.
Harry looked doubtful. You were probably hallucinating, John.
Yeah, but if I was hallucinating, why would I hallucinate Kathy as a CDF soldier? Wouldn't I just remember her as she was?
I don't know, Harry said. Hallucinations, by definition, aren't real. It's not as if they follow rules. There's no reason you couldn't have hallucinated your dead wife as CDF.
Harry, I know I sound a little nuts, but I saw my wife, I said. I may have been chopped up, but my brain was working fine. I know what I saw.
Harry sat there for a moment. My squad had a few days on the Sparrowhawk to stew, you know, he said. We were crammed into a rec room with nowhere to go and nothing to do. They wouldn't even allow us access to the ship's entertainment servers. We had to be escorted to the head. So we talked about the crew of the ship, and about the Special Forces soldiers. And here's an interesting thing. None of us knew anyone who had ever entered the Special Forces from the general ranks. By itself, it doesn't mean anything. Most of us are still in our first couple of years of service, but it's interesting.
Maybe you have to be in the service a long time, I said.
Maybe, Harry said. But maybe it's something else. They call them ghost brigades, after all.
He took another sip of his juice and then set it down on my bedside table.
I think I'm going to go do some digging. If I don't come back, avenge my death.
I'll do as best as I can under the circumstances, I said.
Do that, Harry said, grinning. See what you can find out, too. You have at least another couple of interrogation sessions coming up. Try a little interrogating of your own.
What about the Sparrowhawk?
Major Jobna said at our next interview session.
Well, I'd like to send a message to it, I said. I want to thank them for saving my life.
It's not necessary, Lieutenant Colonel Newman said.
Well, I know, but it's the polite thing to do, I said. When someone keeps you from being eaten toe by woodland animals, the least he can do is send a little note. In fact, I'd like to send the note directly to the guys who found me. How do I do that?
You can't, Jobna said.
Well, why not? I asked, innocently.
The Sparrowhawk is a Special Forces ship, Newman said. They run silent. Communication between Special Forces ships and the rest of the fleet is limited.
Well, that doesn't seem very fair, I said. I've been in the service for over a year and I never had problem getting mail to my friends on other ships. You would think even Special Forces soldiers would want to hear from their friends in the outside universe.
Newman and Jobna glanced at each other.
We're getting off track, Newman said.
All I want to do is send a note, I said.
We'll look into it,
Jobna said, in a tone that said, No, we won't. I sighed and then told them, for probably the 20th time, about why I gave permission to blow the Modesto's shuttle bay doors.
How's your jaw? Dr. Fiorina asked. Fully functional and ready to chew on something, I said. Not that I don't like soup through a straw, but it gets monotonous after a while.
I sympathize, Fiorina said. Now, let's look at the leg. I pulled down the covers and let him take a look. The ring was now halfway down the calf.
Oh, excellent, he said.
I want you to start walking on that. The unprocessed portion will support your weight, and it'll be good to give the leg a little exercise. I'll give you a cane to use for the next couple of days. I notice you have some friends who come to visit you. Why don't you have them take you to lunch or something?
You don't have to tell me twice,
I said, and flexed the new leg a little.
Good as new, I said.
Better,
Fiorina said. We've made a few improvements to the CDF body structure since you were enlisted. They've been incorporated into the leg, and the rest of your body will feel the benefit, too.
Makes you wonder why the CDF just doesn't go all the way, I said. Replace the body with something designed totally for war.
Fiorina looked up from his data pad.
You have green skin, cat's eyes, and a computer in your skull, he said. How much less human do you want to be?
That's a good point, I said.
Indeed, Fiorina said.
I'll have an orderly bring in that cane.
He tapped his data pad to send the order.
Hey, Doc, I said. Did you treat anybody else that came off the Sparrowhawk?
No,
he said.
Really, Corporal, you were challenge enough.
So none of the Sparrowhawk crew?
Fiorina smirked.
Oh, no. They're special forces.
So?
Let's just say they have special needs, Fiorina said.
And then the orderly came in with my cane.
You know what you can find out about the Ghost Brigades? Officially, I mean?
Harry said.
I'm guessing not a lot, I said.
Not a lot is an overstatement, Harry said.
You can't find out a damn thing.
Harry, Jesse, and I were lunching at one of Phoenix Station's commissaries. For my first trip out, I suggested we go as far away from Brenneman as we could. This particular commissary was on the other side of the station. The view was nothing special. It overlooked a small shipyard, but was known station-wide for its burgers, and the reputation was justified. The cook, in his past life, had begun a chain of specialty hamburger restaurants. For a literal hole in the wall, it was constantly packed. But my and Harry's burgers were growing cold as we talked about the Ghost Brigades.
I asked Javna Newman about getting a note to the Sparrowhawk and got stonewalled, I said.
Not surprised, Harry said. Officially, the Sparrowhawk exists, but that's all you can find out. You can't find out anything about its crew, its size, its armament, or its location. All the information isn't there. Do a more general search on Special Forces or Ghost Brigades in the CDF database, and you likewise get nothing.
So you guys have nothing at all, Jesse said.
Oh, I didn't say that,
Harry said, and smiled.
You can't find out anything officially, but unofficially, there's lots to know.
Then how do you manage to find information unofficially?
Jesse said.
Well, you know, Harry said, my sparkling personality does wonders.
Please, Jesse said, I'm eating here, which is more than you two can say.
So, what did you find out?
I asked, and took a bite of my burger.
It was fabulous.
Understand that this is all rumor and innuendo, Harry said,
which means that it's probably more accurate than what we'd get officially, I said.
Possibly, Harry granted. The big news is that there is indeed a reason why they're called Ghost Brigades. It's not an official designation, you know. It's a nickname. The rumor, which I've heard from more than one place, is that Special Forces members are dead people.
Excuse me? I said.
Jesse looked up from her burger.
Well, not real dead people per se, Harry said. They're not zombies. But there are a lot of people who sign up to join the CDF who die before their 75th birthday. When that happens, apparently the CDF doesn't just throw out your DNA. They use it to make Special Forces members.
Something hit me. Jesse, you remember when Leon Deke died? What the medical technician said? A last-minute volunteer for the Ghost Brigades. I thought it was just some kind of sick joke.
How can they do that?
Jesse asked.
That's not ethical at all.
Isn't it?
Harry said.
When you give your intent to sign up, you give the CDF the right to use whatever procedures necessary to enhance your combat readiness, and you can't be combat ready if you're dead. It's in the contract. If it's not ethical, it's at least legal.
Yeah, but there's a difference between using my DNA to create a new body for me to use
and using the new body without me in it, Jesse said.
Details, details, Harry said.
I don't like the idea of my body running around on its own, Jesse said. I don't think it's right for the CDF to do that.
Well, that's not all they do, Harry said. You know that these new bodies we have are deeply genetically modified. Well, apparently Special Forces bodies are even more modified than ours. The Special Forces soldiers are guinea pigs for new enhancements and abilities before they're introduced into the general population. And there are rumors that some of the modifications are truly radical. Bodies modified to the point of not looking human anymore.
My doctor said something about Special Forces soldiers having special needs, I said. But even allowing for hallucinations, the people who rescued me looked human enough. And we didn't see any mutants or freaks on the Sparrowhawk, Jesse said.
We weren't allowed full run of the ship, either, Harry pointed out. They kept us in one area and kept us disconnected from everything else. We saw sickbay, and we saw the wreck area, and that was it.
People see Special Forces in battle and walking around all the time, Jesse said.
Well, sure they do, Harry said. But that's not saying that they see all of them.
Your paranoia is acting up again, sweetie, Jesse said, and fed Harry a French fry.
Mmm. Thank you, precious,
Harry said, accepting it.
But even throwing out the rumor about super-modified Special Forces, there's still enough there to account for John seeing his wife. It's not really Kathy, though. Just someone using her body.
Who? I said.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Harry said. Your wife is dead, so they couldn't put her personality into the body. Either they have some sort of pre-formatted personality they put into Special Forces soldiers, or someone else went from an old body into her new one, I said.
Jesse shivered. I'm sorry, John, but that's just creepy.
John? You okay?
Harry said.
What? Yeah, I'm fine, I said. It's just a lot to deal with at one time. The idea that my wife could be alive, but not really, and that someone who isn't her is walking around in her skin. I think I almost preferred it when there was a possibility that I hallucinated her. I looked over to Harry and Jesse. Both of them were frozen and staring.
Guys? I said.
Speak of the devil,
said Harry.
What? I said.
John, Jesse said. She's in line for a burger.
I spun around, knocking over my plate as I did so. Then I felt like I got dunked directly into a vat of ice.
Holy shit, I said.
It was her. No doubt about it. Chapter 14. I started to get up. Harry grabbed my hand.
What are you doing?
He asked. I'm going to go talk to her, I said.
You sure you want to do that?
He asked. What are you talking about? I asked.
Of course I'm sure. What I'm saying is that maybe you'd want Jesse or me to talk to her first, Harry said. To see if she wants to meet you.
Jesus, Harry, I said. This isn't the sixth fucking grade. That's my wife.
No, it's not, John, Harry said. It's someone entirely different. You don't know if she will even want to speak to you.
John, even if she does speak to you, you're going to be two total strangers, Jesse said. Whatever you're expecting out of this encounter, you're not going to get it.
I'm not expecting anything, I said.
We just don't want you to be hurt, Jesse said.
I'll be fine, I said, and looked at them both. Please, let me go, Harry. I'll be fine. Harry and Jesse looked at each other. Harry let go of my hand. Thank you, I said.
What are you going to say to her?
Harry wanted to know. I'm going to tell her thanks for saving my life, I said, and got up. By this time, she and two companions had got their orders and had made their way to a small table further back in the commissary. I threaded my way to the table. The three of them were talking, but stopped as I approached. She had her back to me as I approached and turned as her companions glanced up at me. I stopped as I got a look at her face. It was different, of course. Beyond the obvious skin and eyes, she was so much younger than Kathy had been. A face that was as Kathy was half a century before. Even then, it was different. Leaner than Kathy's had ever been, keeping with the CDF genetically installed predisposition for fitness. Kathy's hair had always been a nearly uncontrolled mane, even as she aged and most other women switched to more matronly cuts. The woman in front of me kept her hair close on her head and off her collar. It was the hair that was the most jarring. It had been so long since I'd seen a person without green skin that it didn't register with me anymore. But the hair was nothing that I remembered. "It's not nice to stare," the woman said, using Kathy's voice. "And before you ask, you're not my type." "Yes, I am," a part of my brain said.
"I'm sorry, I don't really mean to intrude," I said. "I was just wondering if you might recognize me."
She flicked her eyes up and down on me.
"I really don't," she said. "And trust me, we weren't in basic training together."
"You rescued me," I said. "On Coral." She perked up a little at this.
"No shit," she said. "No wonder I didn't recognize you. The last time I saw you, you were missing the lower half of your head. No offense. And no offense to this either, but I'm amazed you're still alive. I wouldn't have bet on you to make it."
"I had something to live for," I said.
"Apparently," she said.
"I'm John Perry," I said, and held out my hand. "I'm afraid I don't know your name."
"Jane Sagan," she said, taking it.
I held it a little longer than I should have. She had a slightly puzzled expression when I finally let go. "Corporal Perry," one of her companions began. He had taken the opportunity to access information about me from his brain pal. "We're kind of in a rush to eat here. We have to be back to our ship in a half hour, so if you don't mind, do you recognize me from anywhere else?" I asked Jane, cutting him off.
"No," she said, slightly frosty now. "Thanks for coming over, but now I'd really like to eat."
"Let me send you something," I said. "A picture, through your brain pal."
"That's really not necessary," Jane said.
"One picture," I said. "Then I'll go. Humor me."
"Fine," she said. "Hurry it up."
Among the few possessions that I had taken with me when I left Earth was a digital photo album of family, friends, and places that I had loved. When my brain pal activated, I had uploaded the photos into its onboard memory, a smart move in retrospect since my photo album and all my other earthly possessions but one went down with the Modesto. I accessed one particular photo from the album and sent it to her. I watched as she accessed her brain pal and then turned again to look at me. "Do you recognize me now?" I asked. She moved fast. Faster than even normal CDF, grabbed me and slammed me against a nearby bulkhead. I was pretty sure I felt one of my newly repaired ribs crack. From across the commissary, Harry and Jesse leapt up and moved in. Jane's companions moved to intercept. I tried to breathe.
"Who the fuck are you?" Jane hissed at me. "And what are you trying to pull?"
"I'm John Perry," I wheezed. "I'm not trying to pull anything."
"Bullshit! Where did you get that picture?"
she said. Close up, low.
"Who made it for you?"
"No one made it for me,"
I said, equally low.
"I got that picture at my wedding. It's my wedding photo."
I almost said our wedding photo, but caught myself just in time.
"The woman in the picture is my wife, Kathy. She died before she could enlist. They took her DNA and used it to make you. Part of her is in you. Part of you is in that picture. Part of what you are gave me this."
I held up my left hand and showed her my wedding ring.
my only remaining earthly possession. Jane snarled, picked me up, and hurled me hard across the room. I skipped over a couple of tabletops, knocking away hamburgers, condiment packages, and napkin holders, before coming to rest on the ground. Along the way, I clocked my head on a metal corner. There was the briefest of oozes coming from my temple. Harry and Jesse disengaged from their wary dance with Jane's companions and headed over to me. Jane stalked towards me, but was stopped by her friends halfway across.
"Listen to me, Perry," she said. "You stay the fuck away from me from now on. The next time I see you, you're gonna wish I'd left you for dead."
She stalked off. One of her companions followed after her. The other, who had spoken to me earlier, came over to us. Jesse and Harry got up to engage him, but he put his hands out in a sign of truce.
"Perry,"
he said,
"what was that all about? What did you send her?"
"Ask her yourself, pal," I said.
"That's Lieutenant Tagore to you, Corporal."
Tagore looked at Harry and Jesse.
"I know you two," he said. "You were on the Hampton Roads."
"Yes, sir,"
Harry said.
"Listen to me, all of you," he said. "I don't know what the hell that was about, but I want to be very clear about this. Whatever it was, we weren't part of it. Tell whatever story you want, but if the words Special Forces are anywhere in it, I'm going to make it my personal mission to ensure that the rest of your military career is short and painful. I'm not kidding. I will fuck your skull. Are we clear?"
"Yes, sir,"
Jesse said. Harry nodded. I wheezed.
"Get your friend looked after," Tagore said to Jesse. "He looks like he just got the shit kicked out of him."
He walked out.
"Christ, John,"
Jesse said, taking a napkin and cleaning my head wound.
"What did you do?"
"I sent her a wedding photo," I said.
"Well, that's subtle,"
Harry said, and looked around.
"Where's your cane?"
"I think it's over by the wall she slammed me into," I said.
Harry left to go get it.
"Are you okay?"
Jesse said to me.
"Yeah, I think I busted a rib," I said.
"That's not what I meant," she said.
"I know what you meant," I said. "And as far as that goes, I think something else is busted, too."
Jesse cupped my face with her hand. Harry came back with my cane. We limped back to the hospital. Dr. Fiorina was extremely displeased with me. Someone nudged me awake. When I saw who it was, I tried to speak. She clapped a hand over my mouth.
"Quiet," Jane said. "I'm not supposed to be here."
I nodded. She took her hand away.
"Talk low," she said.
"We could use brain pals," I said.
"No," she said. "I want to hear your voice. Just keep it down."
"Okay," I said.
"I'm sorry about today," she said. "It was just unexpected. I don't know how to react to something like that."
"It's all right," I said. "I shouldn't have broken it to you that way."
"Are you hurt?"
she asked.
"You cracked a rib," I said.
"Sorry about that,"
she said.
"Already healed," I said.
She studied my face, eyes flicking back and forth.
"Look, I'm not your wife," she said suddenly. "I don't know who you think I am or what I am, but I was never your wife. I didn't know she existed until you showed me the picture today."
"You had to know about where you came from," I said.
"Why?"
she said hotly.
"We know we've been made from someone else's genes, but they don't tell us who they were. What would be the point? That person's not us. We're not even clones. I've got things in my DNA which aren't even from Earth. We're the CDF guinea pigs, haven't you heard?"
"I heard," I said.
"So I'm not your wife. That's what I've come here to say. I'm sorry, but I'm not."
"All right," I said.
"Okay,"
she said.
"Good. I'm going now. Sorry about throwing you across the room."
"How old are you?"
I asked.
"Why?"
she asked.
"I'm just curious," I said. "And I don't want you to go yet."
I don't know what my age has got to do with anything, she said.
Kathy's been dead for 9 years now,
I said.
I want to know how long they bothered to wait before mining her genes to make you.
I'm 6 years old, she said.
I hope you don't mind if I say you don't look like most 6-year-olds that I've met, I said.
I'm advanced for my age, she said. Then, that was a joke?
I know, I said.
People don't get that sometimes, she said. It's because most of the people I know are around the same age.
How does it work? I said. I mean, what's it like, being 6, not having a past?
Jane shrugged. I woke up one day and I didn't know where I was or what was going on. But I was already in this body and I already knew things. How to speak, how to move, how to think and fight. I was told I was in special forces and that it was time to start training, and my name was Jane Sagan.
Nice name, I said.
It was randomly selected, she said. Our first names are common names. Our last names are mostly from scientists and philosophers. There's a Ted Einstein and a Julie Pasteur in my squad. At first, you don't know that, of course, about the names. Later, you learn a little bit about how you were made, after they've let you develop your own sense of who you are. No one you know has many memories. It's not until you meet Realborn that you know that anything's really different about you. And we don't meet them very often. We don't really mix.
Realborn? I asked.
It's what we call the rest of you, she said.
If you don't mix, what were you doing at the commissary? I said.
I wanted a burger, she said. It's not that we can't, mostly. It's that we don't.
Did you ever wonder about who you were made from? I asked.
Sometimes, Jane said. But we can't know. They don't tell us about our progies, the people we're made from. Some of us are made from more than one, you know. But they're all dead anyway. Have to be, or they wouldn't use them to make us. And we don't know who knew them, and if the people who knew them get in the service, it's not like they'd find us most of the time. And you Realborn die pretty damn fast out here. I don't know anyone else who's ever met a progy's relative. Or a husband.
Did you show your lieutenant the picture? I asked.
No, she said. He asked about it. I told him you sent me a picture of yourself and that I trashed it. And I did, so the action would register if he looked. I haven't told anyone about what we said. Can I have it again? The picture?
Of course, I said. I have others, too, if you want them. If you want to know about Kathy, I can tell you about her as well.
Jane stared at me in the dim room. In the low light, she looked more like Kathy than ever.
I ached just a little to look at her.
I don't know, she said, finally. I don't know what I want to know. Let me think about it. Give me that one picture for now, please.
I'm sending it now, I said.
I have to go, she said. Listen, I wasn't here, and if you see me anywhere else, don't let on that we've met.
Why not? I asked.
It's important for now, she said.
All right, I said.
Let me see your wedding ring, Jane asked.
Sure, I said,
and slipped it off to let her look at it.
She held it gingerly and peered through it.
It says something, she said.
My love is eternal, Kathy, I said. She had it inscribed before she gave it to me.
How long were you married? She asked.
42 years, I said.
How much did you love her? Jane asked. Your wife, Kathy. When people are married for a long time, maybe they stay together out of habit.
Sometimes they do, I said. But I loved her very much. All the time we were married. I love her now.
Jane stood up,
looked at me again, gave me back my ring, and left without saying goodbye.
"Tachyons,"
said Harry as he approached my and Jesse's breakfast table.
"Bless you," said Jesse.
"Very funny,"
he said, sitting down.
"Tachyons may be the answer to how the Ray knew we were coming."
"Well, that's great," I said. "Now, if only Jesse and I knew what tachyons were, we'd be a lot more excited about them."
"They're exotic subatomic particles," Harry said. "They travel faster than light and backwards through time. So far, they've just been a theory, because after all, it's difficult to track something that is both faster than light and going backwards in time. But the physics of skip-drive theory allows for the presence of tachyons at any skip. Just as our matter and energy translates into a different universe, tachyons from the destination universe travel back into the universe being left behind. There's a specific tachyon pattern a skip drive makes at a translation event. If you can spot tachyons forming that pattern, you'd know a ship with a skip drive was coming in and when."
"Where do you hear this stuff?" I said.
"Well, unlike the two of you, I don't spend my days lounging about," Harry said. "I've made friends in interesting places."
"If we knew about this tachyon pattern, or whatever it is, why didn't we do something about it before?"
Jesse asked.
"What you're saying is that we've been vulnerable all this time and just been lucky so far?"
"Well, remember what I said about tachyons being theoretical to this point," Harry said. "That's sort of an understatement. They're less than real. They're mathematical abstractions at best. They have no relation to the real universes in which we exist and move. No race of intelligence that we know of has ever used them for anything. They have no practical application."
"Or so we thought," I said. Harry gave a hand motion of assent.
"If this guess is correct, then it means that the Array have a technology that's well beyond what we have the capability to create ourselves. We're behind them in this technology race."
"So how do we catch up?" Jesse said.
Harry smiled.
"Well, who said anything about catching up? Remember when we first met on the Beanstalk and we talked about the colony's superior technology? You remember how I suggested they got it?"
"Through encounters with aliens,"
Jesse said.
"Right," Harry said. "We either trade for it or take it in battle. Now, if there really is a way to track tachyons from one universe to another, we could probably develop the technology ourselves to do it, but that's going to take time and resources we don't have. Far more practical to simply take it from the RA.
"You're saying the CDF is planning to go back to Coral," I said.
"Of course we are," Harry said. "But the goal now isn't just to take the planet back. It's not even going to be the primary goal. Now our primary goal is to get our hands on their tachyon detection technology and find a way to defeat it or use it against them."
"The last time we went to Coral, we got our asses kicked," Jesse said.
"We're not going to have a choice, Jesse," Harry said gently. "We have to get this technology. If the technology spreads, every race out there will be able to track colonial movement. In a very real sense, they'll know we're coming before we do."
"It's going to be a massacre again," Jesse said.
"I suspect they'll use a lot more of the special forces this time around," Harry said.
Speaking of which," I said, and then told Harry of my encounter with Jane the night before, which I'd been recounting to Jesse as Harry walked up.
"Looks like she's not planning to kill you after all," Harry said, after I was finished.
"It must have been so strange to talk to her," Jesse said, "even though you know she's not really your wife."
"Not to mention being just 6 years old. Man, that's odd," Harry said.
"It shows, too," I said. "The being six part. She doesn't have much emotional maturity. She doesn't seem to know what to do with emotions when she has them. She threw me across the room because she didn't know how else to deal with what she was feeling."
"Well, all she knows is fighting and killing," Harry said. "We have a life of memories and experiences to stabilize us. Even younger soldiers in traditional armies have 20 years of experiences.
In a real sense, these Special Forces troops are children warriors. It's ethically borderline.
I don't want to open any old wounds, Jesse said, but do you see any of Kathy in her?
I thought about it a moment. Well, she looks like Kathy, obviously, I said, and I think I saw a little of Kathy's sense of humor in her, and a little of her temperament. Kathy could be impulsive.
Did she ever throw you across the room?
Harry asked, smiling. I grinned back. Well, there were a couple of times that if she could have, she would have, I said.
Score one for genetics, Harry said.
Asshole suddenly clicked to life. Corporal Perry, the message read, your presence is required at a briefing with General Keegan at 1000 hours at Operational HQ in the Eisenhower module of Phoenix Station. Be prompt. I acknowledged the message and told Harry and Jesse.
And I thought I had friends in interesting places, Harry said.
You've been holding out on us, John.
I have no idea what this is about, I said.